Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So what if your spouse of nearly 20 years and the parent of your two children turned to you one day and said, "I don't love you anymore. I'm not sure I ever did." How would you respond? Laura Munson's response when her husband said that to her was, "I don't buy it." She later wrote an essay on that difficult time in their marriage, and it was featured in the New York Times August 2009 Modern Love column. The essay met with immense popularity and incited so many reader responses that the New York Times had to temporarily shut down its comments section. Laura Munson's essay is now a memoir. Her book is "This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, A Season of Unlikely Happiness." Laura Munson, welcome to WNYC.
Great to be here, Brian.
You and your husband were college sweethearts.
That's right.
You lived in Montana, a place you both moved to in search of adventure. You have two children and a home on 20 acres of land. But you were having trouble in your careers. He hated his job. You're a writer and had finished 14 novels, but none of them were published. And in dealing with your writing career, you write that you had finally found an internal peace and you were happy. And that's when your husband turns to you and says he doesn't love you anymore and he never did. Did you have any sense that that was coming?
Well, I definitely saw a crisis of self coming, stacked up year after year of his job failure. But I didn't see that particular result of his stress coming, no.
And you told yourself that this was his issue and that it wasn't about you or your marriage. In fact, you kept repeating this to him. What can we do to give you the distance you need without hurting the family? And in your book, you say this was a very calculated statement. Can you explain what asking that question meant to you?
Well, to me, distance is a normal part of any relationship, and it's a necessary part of every relationship. So I knew our relationship to be a good one. I knew this man, and I knew that he was a family man, and I really recognized this as a crisis of self. So to me, it was, what can we do to give you the distance that you need so that we can still preserve our family? And that meant, for him, living where we live, there was a lot of hiking, there was a lot of fishing, there was a lot of time for him just to really work with his stuff.
And you were convinced that your husband needed an adventure alone. You wanted him to go to Australia or backpack in Nepal or something, but he refused to go. And in terms of distance, you compromised on creating a space for him above the garage. You have your own office in your home. And in your book, you jokingly reference Betty Davis's quote that the secret to marriage is separate bedrooms. Does your husband still use that space above the garage? Is it still his space?
Well, we actually never ended up building it. That was something that I offered to him, along with a personal walkabout or any kind of thing that would really help him to focus and process. But we are now looking into building that space. But really, living in Montana, it becomes a room in your own home, just the natural world around you.
And you went to therapy. You had a therapist, helped you gain perspective. In fact, it was your therapist's idea for you to set a deadline for yourself, really, of how long you could wait while your husband figured out what he needed, and you decided you could wait 6 months. Fortunately, it took 4.5 months before things improved. How'd you come up with a six-month deadline?
Well, that six-month deadline was really just a check-in point. It wasn't like this guillotine that was going to slam down and say, okay, marriage over. It was just a time to check the pulse, to make sure that I wasn't in denial, to make sure that this is really behavior that I could put up with and that you know, I wasn't being a pushover. And so with the help of a good therapist, we had these check-in times within that 6 months as well.
Why do you think your story was so commented on when it first hit the Modern Love column in the Times last summer? Is it just that people like to gossip about other couples' affairs, or do you think this really struck a chord with a lot of people going through similar things?
Well, I think the thing that so many of us fear the most is being told that we're unloved by the person that we love. And that message resonates in any relationship you're in. But also, because of our current economy globally, so many relationships are taking a hit. I heard from people from Lebanon, a woman whose therapist gave her my essay from the New York Times in Lebanon, people from Australia, Buddhists, ministers, people from all different social groups and religious groups. It really was a message of instinct and empowerment that people, I think, are needing to hear right now.
Listeners, does this sound like you? Are you one of the many who commented on that Modern Love column. Laura Munson is with us. Her book is called This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, A Season of Unlikely Happiness. 212-433-9692. Have you ever gone through this kind of a crisis where maybe you said to a longtime partner that you don't love the person anymore and perhaps never did? How did you know it was about the relationship and not a separate issue personal to you, which is what Laura thought was actually going on with her husband? Tell us about your experience and perhaps anything you learned from this article if you read the original version. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Do you put this in any wider social context? Is this just about you two as an individual couple and your kids living out there, you know, on property in Montana? Or is this, are there undercurrents of what's going on in our world?
That's a great question. I just think that so many people are being impacted, like I said before, because of the economy. But, you know, ultimately this book is not a strategy about how to stay married. It's a philosophy about how to preserve your well-being during a hard time. And you can plug that into a relationship with your boss or your parents or a sibling. It's not just primarily a marital issue.
This must have been a challenging time for your children. Your daughter was 12. Your son was 8 when this was going on. Your husband said the kids would understand, that it was more important for the children to see their father happy, and you disagreed. In hindsight, what do you think your children made of that whole experience?
Well, in hindsight, which is always 20/20, right? They say that they're really proud and that they are glad we got through that hard time. We leveled with them because we don't deal in myth in our family. We told them at that time, look, adults are people too, and we have crisis and breakdowns. And distance is important in order, you know, in the ebb and flow of relationships. So they're ultimately happy we got through it. And I hope that they can go into their future relationships knowing that crisis doesn't have to bring you down.
You kept yourself busy throughout the 4.5 months of distance. You carried on as if your husband was participating fully in the family's affairs in many respects. You continued to set the table for 4, even though you knew he might not show up on a given night. Were you doing this for his benefit, for your own, for the kids?
Well, I was going on instinct, and it wasn't like he wasn't there ever. He was there often. So I just felt that it was important to create a stable home environment during this time.
And you were committed to the marriage, and you believed he was too, but during these months of distance, did you start to lose some confidence in his commitment? Were you just riding out the 6-month deadline you had secretly imposed?
Well, we all have these destructive thoughts in our heads, and in my book, I actually named this destructive thought, and I call it her my evil twin sister, Sheila, and I think we all have something like
that. We all have our evil twins in our heads.
Yeah, and so my work during that time was really to bust through that voice, and 20 years of being rejected in the publishing industry had me in a place where I had already made that choice to stop basing my personal happiness on things outside my control. So that was really the work that summer. What can I control in this moment? What can I own? And then what do I need to let go of?
You sensed things were changing for the better when he started coming home on time for dinner and making eye contact with you in the kitchen once again. But you really knew things had changed for the better when he upgraded the satellite dish.
Yeah, that was tongue-in-cheek, but also very true, because I know how much he loves to watch sports. So when I saw that happening, I thought, okay, this guy's staying.
So that was kind of a banal moment, and yet the transformation was gradual. And was there ever an aha moment, really, where you knew that you were right not to believe him, that he did, in fact, love you?
Well, when his sister was dying of cancer and he was called to go be with her during that time and assist her in traveling to Chicago for clinical trials at the University of Chicago, that whole process for him drove home a sense of what really matters in life. And he was able to see that his relationships are what mattered to him. And so when he returned from that whole ordeal, that's when he sat down with me and he said, I've been a 40-year-old trying to be this 20-year-old. I've been miserable in my job. I can never repay you for what I put you through this summer. I love you. And that was when I knew. It wasn't like everything was all tied up in a perfect pink bow, though. I mean, a marriage, you know, ebb and flow. But that's when I started to see this guy was coming back.
And Sarah, on our comments page, asks, How does her husband feel about the article being out and now the book and all of the press about his personal issues?
I just talked to him before this interview and I asked him how he was doing. And he said, hey, you know what? We got through a hard time and we live in such a reactionary society. And so many people are just ready to say, okay, fine, forget it. You're out of here. And, you know, he's glad that I didn't do that. He's also wanting to remind me that this is his 20-year dream, too, to have his wife be a published author.
Do you think you make it sound like it's just over, that he says it was a hard time that we got through, not like it's an ongoing set of issues that you have to manage.
Oh, well, marriage is management 24/7, isn't it? I mean, again, that ebb and flow. But we, you know, we're better for it. And if you can get through a crisis, then you're no longer dealing in illusion and myth, the happily ever after myth. The career brings you, career success brings you happiness myth. The money brings you happiness myth. So we feel stronger for it. It's not just the end of something hard and the beginning of everything being perfect.
Laura Munson, author of This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, A Season of Unlikely Happiness, based on her column in the Modern Love section of the New York Times last summer that was so well read and commented on. Will in Jamaica, you're on WNYC. Hi, Will.
Hello. It's so funny that I'm listening to this now because starting the first after New Year's, basically, me and my wife, we decided to do the same thing. And I mean, we still stay in contact with each other and stuff, and, you know, like date nights or what have you. But I think it was a progression over, like, her not being fulfilled and her writing career. And I guess me, you know, getting some little success in my art career, but we still wanted to do things separate outside of ourselves that, I don't know, I guess we kind of blamed each other for, like, our failures.
So now you're trying to figure out how much of this is a personal issue to each of you, how much it has to do with the marriage, and how you're going to put it back together again or not?
Yeah, basically.
Laura, any advice for Will?
Well, first of all, two artists being married, you know, we all know that the artist's life is brutal. So
yeah.
I understand that from a deep personal level. But you know, the freedom here is that you really can practice living in the moment during this crisis. We don't have to meet crisis with state of emergency panic, and it sounds like you're not doing that. So really letting go of outcome is where the freedom is, I believe.
Okay.
Well, good luck. Letting go of outcome. What does that mean?
Well, not letting the future, which doesn't exist actually in reality, define how you are and who you are.
Even though you wanted a certain outcome, which was for the marriage to stay together.
Not necessarily. I mean, again, this wasn't a strategy to just stay married or to hang on to my man. This was this philosophy about how to practice being well in the moment and taking care of myself.
At one point in your loneliness, you write about finding community online. You joined Facebook. And it became a welcome relief for a few days, you say, but then it seems like you abandoned it.
I abandoned Facebook.
Yes.
Because, well, I still am a Facebook junkie. But I think it's so important to rely on your commitment to community, whether it's Facebook. But for me, it was really stepping back into my local community and the issues that matter to me where we live. There's a lot of development coming in, and so we just need to be responsible with land use there. And there was a local developer that wanted to come in and chop up our neighborhood into small parcels, and it was a great time to fight, and we won that.
Have your children read your book or your article? How old are they now?
Almost 14 and almost 10. And no, they haven't. And they know that their mother's a writer and that sometimes they're going to read my stuff and sometimes they choose not to. I've said, if you want to, you can. I mean, we're not hiding anything from them.
Because it's your personal journey, but also it's your family's story. And at some point, they're going to read about all this turmoil.
Right. Well, and I say this in the book, too. I was very careful to keep my kids out of it for the most part. And really, also my husband. I mean, I wrote what was important to the story, but anything that was gratuitous, I left out.
You've still got those 14 novels,
yeah,
unpublished sitting on your computer. Did you manage to get, you know, your one? It's an irony, isn't it, that you got a nonfiction contract after all that because of this one little essay?
It's so ironic. I never thought that I would be the main character in my first published book. But my agent, my wonderful agent, Tricia Davey, has three more books that I think are pretty solid. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed.
So you're going to get, you didn't get a combination contract, one nonfiction book that they knew they could sell and one novel in the bargain.
No, we didn't.
Okay, maybe next book.
Well, you never know what's going to sell.
Laura Munson will be reading from her new book tonight at the Barnes & Noble at 86th and Lex at 7 p.m.
That's right.
A reading and a signing. And the book is called This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, A Season of Unlikely Happiness. Thank you so much for sharing some of it with us.
Thanks, Brian.
And this just in from the Associated Press, of interest to you netizens out there, a federal appeals court has ruled that the FCC lacks the authority to require broadband providers to give equal treatment to all internet traffic flowing over their networks. So this strikes a blow to net neutrality advocates, and it marks a serious setback for the FCC, which needs authority to regulate the internet in order to push ahead with key parts of its massive national broadband plan. So possible large implications for the net neutrality movement and for national regulation of broadband access in general coming from a federal appeals court within the hour. Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Cowett, Alan Smith, and Rachel Senador produced this program. We had intern help today from Matthew Gurry and Amanda Magnus. And our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. Talk to you tomorrow. I'm Brian Lehrer.